Welcome to the second season of Alternative Parenting Podcast, where we learn how to guide our kids to find their own path while supporting them in cultivating traits that will empower them to live a life of fulfillment, meaning, and satisfaction. I'm your host, Efrat Amira. In the last few years, I've become obsessed with the topic of resilience. I'm really trying to understand what resilience is, how I can get more resilient as a mom, how I can nurture resilience in my kids. What I've come to learn is that resilience is a bodily state. It's a deep sense of safety that we have in our bodies. And what we actually want at the end of the day is to teach our kids that stressful situations, no matter what they are safe, and that they can cope with stressful situations. Resilience is actually the ability to adapt and bounce back in the face of adversity, challenges, or significant stressors. And every day we have an opportunity to nurture that resilience in our kids because there are so many times in our day that are very stressful. And for kids, it's even more. And because our kids are so sensitive, their nervous system gets stimulated very, very quickly. And our job as adults is to get them back into calm, to help them move through that stressful state and back to a state of safety where they actually can be who they are, where they actually can learn, where they can flow, where they can play, where they can cooperate with us, where they bring forth their humanity. So I have created a free guide for you guys, which is called Raising Resilient Kids. You can grab it for free at alternativeparenting.ck.page/resilience. I will also link to that in the show notes. The episode today is a conversation with Leah Lahue. We know already about the mind-body connection. It's very obvious to us. We know that our thoughts impact our body directly. But the part that we are learning more and more about these days is the power of our body in and of itself. We are mammals. We are part of nature. We have innate wisdom running through our veins. It's the one thing that is undeniable. Parenting trends will come and go. As science advances, we will learn more and more about our human nature, but the wisest resource is not in the books, but actually within us. What we want to do is learn to listen to that wisdom. The way that we do that is by connecting to our bodies. In this episode, we talked about the connection to our bodies. We talked about birth as the first place where we can tap into our infinite power within, and then take that experience into our parenting. We discussed how to raise our kids to be connected from the get-go to their own inner knowledge so that they can find their own purpose in life and curve their path. Leah Lahue is a birth doula, childbirth educator, and a writer in Dallas, Texas. She is the host of the Liberating Motherhood podcast, which actively challenges the status quo surrounding the business of maternal health care in the United States. The Liberating Motherhood podcast features raw, unfiltered personal stories of motherhood and childbirth, as well as conversations with experts, wellness practitioners, and heart-to-hearts with women whose stories represent all of us. She aims to help women cultivate true embodiment and peace in their birth and motherhood transition. Leah loves coffee paired with a transformative book. She has a background in teaching universal laws and truth, mindfulness, self-awareness, and creative manifestations, and speaks about bringing these values into parenthood. She has a heart for adventure, and she and her husband are renovating a school bus to live off-grid with their 3 and 5-year-old sons. She loves thrift shopping, organizing, feng shui, astrology, and a great parenting podcast. So let's dive into the conversation. Hello, Leah. It's so good to have you here on the podcast. I met Leah on a podcast course that we did together of Kathy Heller's, and it was an amazing podcast course. We both have now a podcast because of it. So I'm very excited to have her here with us. So Leah, why don't you start and tell us a little bit about yourself and about your parenting journey?
Hi, yes, I'd love to. So I am a mom of 2 boys. They are almost 4 and 5 and a half. And my parenting journey has been pretty interesting. I didn't really know that I wanted children until I met my husband randomly in a coffee shop. I had moved to Kansas City the month before and walked into a super full coffee shop, not really looking for a marriage for sure or a husband, and sat down at the last empty table, which was right next to his, and the rest is history. So I wound up, you know, after several years of reevaluating my values, we wound up getting married and luckily conceiving our first child on pretty much the first try. And kind of went down the rabbit hole from that point of educating myself on my body and all the things in the United States culture that really just kind of rubbed me wrong. So evaluating my values as a parent and my expectations for myself. And my husband and I worked out our lives so that one of us could be home with our son at all times. So we decided that daycare was not something that was for us. We both really appreciate a minimalist lifestyle. And as parents, we really believe in drawing out the potential from within our children and holding space for that and nourishing that. My outlook as a parent has always been that my child is my teacher. And that doesn't mean that I don't have boundaries, because I do. And I find boundaries to be something that provides a lot of freedom for me as a parent. So at this stage in my life, I did stay home with my children for about, 3 years or so. And then I became a birth doula. So I am a full-time high-volume birth doula in the Dallas area now. And so I support families in their journey of becoming parents. I've attended over 50 births, most of them in hospitals. And so a lot of my message and what my podcast is about is educating ourselves on the power of the body, allowing nature to unfold, and really having a freedom in the motherhood experience and a voice in the motherhood experience. I find in our current model of care for women, we're really dropping the ball. There's a lot of mental health issues, which myself, I've also struggled with. There's a lot of birth trauma. And I feel that how we birth and how we're treated in birth radiates out into the family. So my podcast covers all different topics surrounding motherhood and birth and different solutions for how things can be done. And in this next journey in my life, my husband and I are renovating a 31-foot school bus. And we are moving to the mountains with our children. So I am learning to homeschool, which is quite an undertaking for me. It's not something I'm naturally, you know, I'm not a good teacher in the structured sense, but I'm a great teacher in the social, emotional, personal responsibility realm. However, math, science, language, reading, I know very little about how to teach that. So I'm on that journey. We basically are purging all of our things, and we're leaving in 2 months on a school bus.
Wow. That is incredible.
Thank you.
So you said a few things that were really, really interesting. You said that you see your child as your teacher, right? And I really resonate with that because I feel like since my kids were born, I'm just learning all the time about myself, about the world, about what humans are actually, when what we're here to do in this planet. So I think that's fascinating. I would like to dive into the homeschooling journey that you're about to embark in, but I wanted to ask you about that. What was the first lesson that you learned from your kid?
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's a good question. I think early on in those first few weeks and months postpartum, the first thing that comes to mind is that it is really important for me to regulate my nervous system. And it's really important to be able to calm myself and take care of myself. Because my child is a mirror of myself. So when they're reacting or they're stressed out, often it's because they're absorbing that from me. Children are just these blank slate open books. They haven't developed all the conscious mind attitudes that adults have. So there's just a lot of spaciousness and vulnerability in their consciousness that creates like a sponge. And so when my child is reacting or crying or having a tantrum, I have to look at my state and really reflect deeply on, am I trying to teach him a lesson or punish because that's how I was treated? Or is there a way I can relax and open and soften and build a connection? And so that I feel like relaxing and opening and softening is the lesson always, just in creation and life and just about everything for me. And so they provide me that opportunity constantly.
Yeah, I think that, you said that we are on a journey since birth, right? Since we give birth to our children in this parenting journey. And if we want to give a birth that is natural and that is in the, I guess in the natural way that we can give birth, I feel like the relaxation is is our key word, because something that I learned in my birth, in my different experiences with birth, in my three experiences with birth, is that the only way that I can do this without it being so painful is by relaxing and letting go, and just surrendering to the experience, surrendering to the moment, and trust my body and trust myself. And I think that is so true also about parenting, because when we surrender to this journey and let them lead our way and not try to control all the time, and not try to, put on them whatever we have learned as kids, then we will let them grow into the fullness of who they are. And I think probably, like for me, what I have learned, the regulation of my nervous system is a huge thing that I've learned in parenting as well. And it's something that I wasn't even aware of,
Right,
that
me
it's a
too.
thing, right? And once we understand that we actually have control on our reactions, and we can control our emotions, then everything becomes different, because we know we are able to pause and reflect for a second on what's going on for us in the moment. And I think that's probably, if we are able to master that, then we can deal with any situation that comes our way in parenting.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that slowing down has to be a priority. I see this as a birth doula a lot. Women are often rushed into birthing. We have a super high rate of inductions in the United States where even the start of birth is medical, and they're using drugs to get you to go into labor. Even just the rushing culture of, working 9 to 5 jobs, having a baby 6 weeks later, oh, congratulations, you can work out now. And yet we haven't seen a chiropractor or a pelvic floor physical therapist. There's been, really no assessment of the person's health. When that advice is given, we're rushed to bounce back with our bodies. We're rushed to go back to work and earn a living and be productive. And then because of that pressure, we rush our children. And who's suffering for it? Well, everyone. Everyone is. Because children aren't meant to be rushed. Children have an innate sense of timing and pace and a deep connection to what their interests are. And I think when we're rushing, we're not listening a lot of the time. And children deserve our attention, and then they deserve our presence and our listening. And when we can realize that that really is the priority, that is the number one thing, is being present and listening and connecting. Everything else comes secondary to that. When we can prioritize that, it's much easier to deal with the pain of motherhood. Like you're saying, that pain of, well, my child's having a meltdown in Costco and everyone's looking at me and I'm judging myself and I'm such a bad mom. And those thoughts hurt, they're painful. That's a contraction in itself, that you're birthing yourself into a new identity of motherhood. So that contraction and that pain and that judgment that you have on yourself and from everyone else, you have to soften into that and become very present with the child. And a lot of times that's how I diffuse the tantrums in Costco. Right?
Yeah, everything that you're saying, I really resonate with, the slowing down and trying to kind of counter our rushing culture that tells us that we need to always be on the do and on the go. And then, taking our kids' childhood from them because we think that they need to be ready right now to be adults, when actually the time of their childhood is the most precious time. And this is the time for them to get to know who they are, what they want, what they like, what they're here to do, how they like to learn, all those things that they can actually take the time that they have right now to learn. So they won't have to do it when they're in their 30s or their 40s and realize that, oh my God, I was in this track that I didn't even want just because that's what society told me to. Or that's what my parents told me that I should do. We can just take that time in childhood and let them be children and let them understand who they are and know themselves. And then when they get to adulthood, then they are much more aligned with who they are. Yeah. So I'm wondering, if we're taking that approach, and you said at the beginning that you're planning to homeschool the kids right now and kind of, leave the place that you are and go live in a place that is pretty remote. And then you also said that you feel like you're good with teaching the social emotional skills, but you're not good with the structured things.
True.
Yeah. So I want to kind of connect the dots here. And how do we, seeing if we see childhood as this time for our kids to just be present and for our kids to just play and for our kids to explore and be creative and be who they are, how do you think we can homeschool them in a way that will actually allow them all that?
Yeah, that's a good question. For me, my main priority right now is I want my children to have as much uninterrupted time in nature as they want. And that's one of the reasons we're leaving the Dallas area, is because it's hot here and it's almost impossible to be outside for many months out of the year. So I think that is a start in helping them connect deeply to themselves. I personally also want that for myself because, it's easy to get disconnected in the city. And I feel like this will be a period of time where we do evaluate who we are and what we want. On top of that, I'm someone who feels the pressure from society to teach my children how to read, how to write, how to do math, and all of these things. But I also, on the inside, feel like it's not that important at this stage. My children are young, my son, for example, he's ambidextrous, and so he switches hands in the middle of words. He's also got a lot of artistic ability, and he switches hands when he's creating art quite a bit. And we do have them in a private preschool that I love, that's very much in alignment with a lot of my values. And the teacher said, I think that your son is left-handed. And I said, oh, yeah, he might be. And she said, he continues to switch hands and he'll probably want to pick a hand at some point. And I said, I'm really okay with him switching hands and balancing out his brain, because we know that that's, sensory motor wise, the left hand and the right brain and vice versa. And, if he wants to develop that artistic capability, then I would rather him do that than be forced to learn how to write, how to pick a hand. I'd rather his body lead the way. He also doesn't have a whole lot of interest in some of those topics yet. And I feel that true education is to draw out, to draw the potential out of a child, or bring what's within without. And that is self-led. And when I say self, I mean the child. So again, it comes back to listening, perceiving needs deeply, and allowing them to initiate what they're interested in. So my son, the same one we're talking about, he has taken kind of a liking to the solar system. And I think that's pretty cool. So we do things with the solar system. Now, could I be more structured in timing with those things? Probably. But also, we focus on the body as well. So balancing, gymnastics, cycling, both of my children ride bicycles. And that is a learned skill too, sensory motor skills and learning to trust your body and learning how to be aware of your surroundings and wrestling and tousling. And, I'm like the perfect boy mom because I can be kind of hardcore like that, like aggressive and fun. But yeah, I do think it comes from allowing the child to lead, but also having a good awareness of what they're going to need to survive in the world.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting what you said about, putting them into boxes, because like the teacher said, he needs to be either left or right. He can't be both. It's very hard for our society to understand something that is both things and not only one. And also, I think those boxes are applied to what is the time frame that they need to learn how to read, and what is the time frame that they need to know how to write, and what level of math they need to be in what age, and so on. And the thing is that from my experience and from many, many stories that I have heard, each person develops in their own pace. So, for example, and I told this story before on this podcast, that my son, I homeschooled my kids for the last 5 years, and this year they're in a homeschool collaborative. But we went in like the unschooling route. So I really let them lead the way. And my older son started to read only when he was 9 years old.
Wow.
And yeah, people are very, surprised when they hear that, because it's just really, really not normal. But the thing is that I knew him and I know him, and I know that he loves, loves, loves books. He's the type of kid that I would sit with him and read a book after book after book every night, and he wouldn't want me to stop. And even till today, we read, we read longer books. We're now reading Harry Potter. So we're reading every night. We're reading for like between half an hour to an hour together.
Yeah.
So I knew that he loves books. He loves stories. He loves to be read to. So I knew that he has this passion, but his brain wasn't still mature enough to be able to understand and integrate what the letters are, connecting the letters, what the sounds of the letters are. It was hard for him because he's bilingual. And I don't think that's even the only reason, or even it's not the main reason. It's just because his brain develops in a different way. But since he learned to read when he was 9 years old, he's been obsessed with reading. He's just reading, and I take, so many books from the library, and he's just reading all the time. Books, magazines, whatever it is that he wants to read, because he has this thirst for knowledge.
Wow.
So I feel like I'm so grateful that I was able to trust his process with this, because I didn't put any pressure on him to learn to read in a younger age. And people from the outside, our grandparents, society told us what's going on. He's not reading yet. Aren't you worried? And I'm like, no, I'm not worried. He's gonna learn how to read. My other son, on the other hand, he's 6 right now, and he's very interested in learning how to read. He really wants to know how to read. So I think that he's gonna learn e earlier. He's 6, but probably till he's like 7, he will know how to read, I believe. But he doesn't love books. He doesn't love to be read to. So what does that really matter? They will learn to
Yeah.
read. They cannot not learn how to read in our society, because everything is written. You cannot survive without reading, and kids understand what they need to survive. They have this innate wisdom in them, and they understand that they need to know this skill in order to survive.
Yeah.
And as parents, we are so worried all the time that they won't know, but actually they know. I feel like they know better than us what are the skills that they need in order to really be successful in this world, because they want to be independent and they want to be successful. So it's hard
Yeah.
to let that go. I understand, and I was there also. It wasn't, that easy for me, but once I was able to trust the process, it was easier for me to let go of those expectations. And it's also for myself,
Yeah.
Letting go of those expectations from ourselves as well.
Yeah, definitely. And the pressure that people's the pressure of people's judgment is vast. I feel like for most mothers,
Yes.
everyone knows how to do it better than you do, right? And that's not actually true.
Yeah. And I think, here we can connect to our bodies, right, and our innate wisdom, and listen to ourselves and not the outside world. So I want you, if you can, tell us a little bit why you think that connection to the body is important, and why, I mean, how is it connected to giving birth and being a parent and educating our kids and all that?
The connection to the body. Well, I think that it starts with the mind-body connection. And I'm someone who has studied the mind-body connection avidly and over periods of time. I've also taught about the mind-body connection, but most of what I studied was the mind. And the idea that our thoughts affect our body, and they do. This is evidence-based. I mean, we know that if someone is thinking thoughts about someone they love, or puppies, or happy baby videos, those thoughts will produce oxytocin, that is like the love hormone. And oxytocin is kind of the king of the jungle in terms of hormones. So it will reduce cortisol, which is the stress hormone. So I really did a lot of mental work in my career as someone who teaches the mind arts, things like concentration, undivided attention, visualization, meditation, manifestation, stillness, things along those lines. But I left the body out. of my studies for quite a while, unknowingly. I didn't know that that was happening. And then when it came down to the big day of I'm going to be a mom and I'm going to give birth and I'm going to experience life move through my body, I realized how important the body is and taking care of the body with nutrition, movement, body work like acupuncture, things that work directly in the nervous system, chiropractic care, physical exercise is very important, and really feeling into the body and bringing the intelligence of the body into the present moment. So we might think, oh, yes, I'm going to think about my body and I'm going to think about being embodied, but thinking about it isn't quite what I'm talking about. When a woman gives birth, the thinking brain goes away. In fact, you enter kind of a transit state, and we call it labor land. And a lot of times I know someone's in active labor and things are progressing because her personality kind of dissolves and she's in a trance and she's swaying back and forth and she's making these slow, low moans with her vocal cords and she's breathing and kind of sinking and melting into that yoga ball. And there's a moment where she becomes fully embodied and she's not thinking about that. She's riding the waves of the energy that are moving through the body that is coming from somewhere else, somewhere divine, and it's all divine. But that energy is beyond our control. And so when you can really tune into your body in the sense of let the mind go and feel and ground and move in your body and have the intelligence of all of the systems present and not cut off or holding your breath or tense, then that energy, the birthing energy, can really move. And I find that when someone's in that state, they know exactly what to do for their birth, even though they've never given birth. Maybe it's a first-time parent. They know how to move. They know what they need. They can ask for what they need if they need to. And a lot of times they're calling the shots when this is really, when someone has really practiced embodiment. They're calling the shots and we're following their lead. And that's really how I think birth is the most ideal, unless there's a medical complication, which is the majority of women. It's just birth is just a natural, normal event. It's not a pathology like the United States culture tends to treat it. Having that experience in birth then allows someone to be able to trust their body and their intuition and their gut feelings, so to speak, in motherhood. So that connection, if it's taken away because, someone wanted to induce your labor, so maybe your provider wanted to induce your labor because they were going out of town, or you had a C-section because your provider had a birthday dinner to get to, and that's been taken away from people, then there's a lot of disconnect with the intuitive sense that the body has. The body is a great teacher. It can tell us a lot about what's going on. And as a parent, if you don't have that connection to your gut and your heart and your intuition, then things are hard.
So you mentioned practice embodiment. How does that look like?
So I recently have discovered this this spiritual movement. It's called ecstatic dance. This is one of my favorite practices, and I'll talk about that in a moment. However, breath work and meditation is really important. The breath is incredibly beneficial in becoming present in your body. You can't breathe in the past and you can't breathe in the future, so you can only breathe here and now. So if you're connected to that deep, cyclical cleansing breath, that is a great start. Things like yoga, like experiences that involve breath and the body, that's important. I've also used pelvic floor physical therapy to heal pelvic organ prolapse and diastasis recti. And that was a reconnection of my mind, breath, and body to heal those areas rather than having a surgery. But ecstatic dance, this is something that, so if you're not familiar with it, what it is, it's this beautiful container. It's a safe space. It's a sober space. So there's no alcohol or drugs involved. And there is, for about 2 hours, it is a time to move your body to music. So there's a DJ that often has created a set of music that's designed to help you have an experience. And so there's a progression in the music that's like a story that you walk into the space, there's candlelight, it's very low lit, nobody speaks. So there's this rule that there's no speaking on the dance floor. And then the group, and here in Dallas, it's about 50 people or so. In the last one that I went, it was 50 to 100. It was a pretty good size. But in the group, there's body language, rules based on body language that are kind of, I won't say rules, but expectations and boundaries that everyone agrees to. So, for example, you can dance with someone else if you want to, but it first requires eye contact and open body language. If they don't make eye contact, then you back away. So really the way that I've used this in it's so similar to birth that this the music, energy of the music and just allowing that to flow through your body. I'm actually starting to move as I'm talking about it because it's so natural to me. Moving without thought to rhythm is a really good way to become fully embodied. And every time I go to these ecstatic dance ceremonies, I call them ceremonies, I have emotional release, like any emotion that's pent up in my body. The last time it was just gratitude. I had so much gratitude that I really dropped into and felt. The emotional release part of that is profound. Because if we're holding in the emotions, there's often a disconnect from the body. It's not until we really allow those emotions to move through that we can become embodied. You know, if you're holding something in, you've got a lump in your throat, or you're trying not to cry in front of your boss, or whatever that is, those emotions have to go somewhere. If not, they become stored in the body, and then it's tension or stiffness or disease. So moving with breath and moving with intention is a huge factor in becoming embodied, especially for birth.
Wow, that sounds an amazing experience. And I think it's actually accessible to each one of us just at home, right? Like we can, I mean, probably it won't be
Yes.
the same experience, the same whole experience, but it's accessible for us in the house. We can just put on music and dance and move to the music in a way that resonates with us. So I think that's incredible. And while you're talking, I was thinking about, how from a very young age we are taught to be in our minds and not in our bodies, even in the way that our educational system is built. Kids that are so young need to sit in a chair all day.
Yeah.
And they're not even allowed to go to the bathroom without, without having permission to go, or they need to eat on a some kind of time frame that is scheduled in advance. And if they're hungry, they can't eat, or if they're full, they need to eat in the recess, even if they don't want to. So we have been conditioned to just ignore our body. Because, for
Right.
young kids, I believe, I don't remember this for myself, but I believe that for young kids, if they always have to kind of ignore their bodies, so in time they forget about it, right? Because it can be very painful to ignore your body.
Yeah.
If you have to sit and you want to move around, or if you're hungry and you can't eat, or if you're thirsty and you can't drink, all those things start to become painful. So we numb ourselves out in time, and we need to be focused on our mind, because what school is teaching us is, what we need to learn, quote unquote, which are only things that are related to our rational mind and not really to our body. Yeah, and I think it's very powerful if we as parents can help bring back that connection to the body. And I feel like for me, I'm doing this as an adult right now because I wasn't taught this when I was younger. And it's like starting from scratch. It's a very, very basic principles of, just feel into my body for a second and see, what do I need right now? Am I thirsty? Am I hungry? Do I need a snack? Do I need to sit down for a second and just rest? Do I need to take a deep breath? Do I need to look outside and orient myself to my environment? It's like those very, very basic things that we have forgotten, which once we start practicing them and doing them on a daily basis, suddenly we have more capacity to be connected to our bodies, and automatically we are more regulated.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So,
because if the mind and the body are in the same place, you're regulated, right? If they're all one and connected, there, I think there's more regulation. And if your body is one place doing one thing and your mind is somewhere else, that disconnect will cause a lot of stress.
yeah, there's a lot of overwhelm, right? It's like very overwhelming for the body. And actually, what I'm learning is that, all the multitasking that we tend to do is so horrible for us because it just, our system cannot handle so much at a time. We have to do one thing at a time. We have to be present with whatever it is that we're doing. And I think as moms, we tend to always multitask, right? It's like it's something that comes with the job. We have to do a lot of things and we have such short time to do them. And I think like here comes the point of, slowing down and see how we can take things off of us and not schedule ourselves so much and not overschedule our kids so much.
Yeah, that's so important.
Yeah. So before we end, I would like you to just maybe say something to moms that are out there listening to us right now, that maybe are facing, they're going to give birth or they already gave birth, but they feel very overwhelmed as moms. And not connected to their bodies. What is one step or a few first steps that they can take in order to be more connected and more maybe self-regulated?
That's a good question. I think new moms and I say new, whether it's your first or your fifth, every time you give birth, you're new again. I think that new moms are largely misunderstood in the United States culture. And what I mean by that is we have no idea how to take care of them. And culturally, at least in our country. And I think for a new mom, it's so important to sink into what do I need right now and who's around me that can help me. Nobody wants to ask for help. Nobody wants to be vulnerable. And I was really guilty of this, quote unquote, guilty. I didn't ask for help at all, and I was struggling mentally, emotionally, and physically more than I've ever struggled in my life. I felt like I was losing my mind after, that first week. I actually did lose my mind. I had horrible intrusive thoughts and postpartum OCD, and I was hungry. I was literally starving because I was breastfeeding and I wasn't eating. I didn't have time to eat, and I didn't know any better, right? Like I was hungry, but I just, I didn't have time. So just recognizing that we're in infancy too. So just as much as that infant needs to be held and fed and nurtured and connected with and touched, so does a mom. And so if you're someone who feels like you're not getting that, it's really important. You're important. You're important to your baby. You're important to your family. It's important that you talk to someone and that you have a support system. If you're pregnant and you haven't given birth yet, cultivating that support system ahead of time is actually a really good way to increase oxytocin, which is the labor hormone. I have a friend who was a first-time mom, and she set herself up so well for this period in her life. And she had a mother blessing with all of her real spiritual female friends, where they got together and they honored her in a ceremony and they brought her gifts, you know, instead of a baby shower, because you don't need that crib. You don't need, the snoo bouncy thing that's going to make your child fall asleep for you while you do the dishes. You need a spiritual community of women that are going to support and uplift you and take care of you during this time. But she did such a good job setting herself up with her community, as she had a schedule of people who were coming to her house with specific jobs weeks out from her birth. Like, whoa. Okay, she took the advice. And what happened for her is she wound up having so much oxytocin in that final stage of pregnancy. And obviously, I can't prove that this is why, but I see a big connection in how she did things very differently than what we're taught to do in our culture. She had like a 3.5 hour precipitous birth. She went into labor before her due date, and her birth was like 3.5 hours for a first-time parent. That's remarkable. It's very rare. Most first-time parents, it's long. It's a long labor, a long journey. But she was flooded with oxytocin and support from her community. And if you haven't set that up and you've already delivered, it's okay to ask. When someone asks how you're doing, tell them the truth. I'm tired. I'm overwhelmed. I'm losing my mind. I'm crying every day. I'm drowning in this. Someone throw me a raft, a lifeline. I need a lifeline. So I don't know if that answered your question. I think it does. But just knowing that your health is important is so important, and you're not alone.
Thank you so much for these words. I feel like any mom should hear that, no matter if she's pregnant, she just gave birth, she has older kids, it doesn't matter. We need to remember that we need to take care of ourselves. And actually, when we ask people for help, we're helping them also, because people like to help. People find meaning in helping, especially if it's for moms, right? So yeah, we need to get vulnerable and ask for help, because that's what creates the community around us. We have to show them what is really going on for us, and then they can show up for us as well.
So good. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Leah. This was an amazing conversation. Please let people know how they can find you and your podcast.
Thank you. Yes. So my Instagram, follow me on Instagram, send me a message. I love to connect with my people. It's at Liberating Motherhood, and the podcast is the same name, Liberating Motherhood, on Apple and Spotify.
Sounds great. I will make sure to link those in the show notes as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed my time with you too.
Thank you. Thank you. Me too. What a great conversation. Here are the main takeaways. Number one, our kids sense our nervous system state. If we want to regulate our kids' emotions, we need to regulate our emotions, and our kids will mirror our state. Number two, when our kids are having a meltdown, the most helpful thing is to soften, open up, relax, and create a connection. That is the fastest way to calm them down, while also teaching them that we are still connected, even when times are rough. Number three, in our rushed culture, slowing down has to be a priority. Children aren't meant to be rushed. We are not meant to be constantly doing and doing. The most essential thing we can do as parents is to connect and be present with our kids. And if we slow down, we allow for that opportunity. Number four, When we give children time to be children, they take their time to learn who they are and what they are meant to be in this world. If they are constantly rushed, then they may find themselves walking on a path that someone else chose for them, but not what they want for themselves. Number 5, connection with nature is essential. We are part of a whole, and spending time outdoors reminds us of that and connects us to our fundamental nature. Number 6, true education is to draw out from the child. It is self-led. Our job as parents is to listen and perceive their needs deeply. There is a lot of pressure from society to learn or do a certain thing, but at the end of the day, each child is unique, and we as parents know what's best for our kids. Number 7, much is talked about the mind-body connection, but it's mostly understood as a top-down approach. But actually, the connection to the body without thought is where lies our power. When we are completely embodied, we have energy that is beyond our control. It's our divine birthright. Number 8, when you have an embodied birth experience, you know exactly what you need, and you are the one calling the shots. Having that experience in birth translates into motherhood. It's a felt sense of agency, control, and empowerment. Number 9, the easiest way to connect to your body is through your breath. You can only breathe in this moment. Number 10, there are other ways to connect to our bodies, and one of them is through moving and dancing to a rhythm that makes us feel connected. When we hold our emotions inside, we become disconnected from our bodies, and that creates a lot of stress. The movement allows our emotions to move through us and get released. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I do. I'll talk to you next week. Bye for now. I hope you enjoyed this episode and was inspired to make small shifts in your parenting that will support your kids to bring forth their full potential while living a life of ease and well-being. To support this show, please make sure to subscribe and rate the show. Leaving a comment can be very helpful in promoting the show on the podcast platform. If you think that this can benefit other parents, please share this podcast with them. I invite you also to follow my Instagram account, Alternative Parenting Coach, and join my private Facebook group, Alternative Parenting, where I would love to hear your thoughts about the episode, what you learned, what inspired you, or what you didn't agree with. Your feedback is extremely valuable to me, as we are all in this process together, living, learning, and evolving. Thank you again, and I'll talk to you soon.